Good to see each one of you. I think a lot of you know me, but if you don't, I'm Pastor Dennis, or just Dennis. And my privilege, I'm on staff here. I usually deal with the older folk, but not always. I'm the visitation pastor. So I'd like to share with you, first of all, something that has nothing to do with my message, but it's very humorous. So good way to start. Dr. Charles Swindoll. How many people have heard of Dr. Charles Swindoll? Most of us, or a lot of us. He said, one day a man decided to become a monk and to join a monastery with a vow of silence. The senior monk told the man applying to be a monk that at the end of 10 years he would have two words to say. And so he first 10 years go by, and the young monk came to the senior monk and said, bet hard. Next 10 years went by, and almost 20 years went by, and the junior monk, or the young monk, with a vow of silence, came before the senior monk and said, bad food. Another 10 years went by, and 30 years, and the young monk said, I quit. And the senior monk said, well, that's the way it is when you're getting young monks complaining. I hope you're not complaining. I'm hoping that you're trusting God with your life. And there's all sorts of things that can happen to us. I see Tim there. We're praying for your brother. You know, it's good to see him. He was involved in a motorcycle accident. We're praying for you. There's lots of things that can happen to us as we go through life, but complaining shouldn't be probably where we should go, you know, or else you're like the young monk. Okay, this morning I'd like to turn with you to the Bible passage in Matthew chapter 24 to begin with. We're really going to be looking at the two parables. A parable in Jesus' time, it comes from the word, the Greek word, parabaleo, parabai, baleo, to throw an illustrative story in front of his listeners. After he's already said something, he said, you get it, here's an illustrative story I'm throwing in front of you, so I'm hoping that you get it finally. So to do all this, to understand really chapter 25, we have to actually go back to 24. If you have a Bible, there should be one there. And so, chapter 24, verse 1. Jesus left the temple and was walking away, and his disciples came to him and called his attention to the buildings. Do you see these things? He said. I tell you the truth, not one stone will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will all these things happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ. Many will be deceived. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still not come. Nation will rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these things are the beginnings of birth pangs. Then you'll be handed over and be persecuted, put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. And at that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray each other. Many false prophets will appear and deceive many. Because of the increase of wickedness, love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the whole world as a testimony to all nations, then the end will come. Jesus was saying, this is when I'm coming. His disciples wanted to know. If you look in the newspaper today, we see North Korea and the ballistic missile and atomic bombs and so forth. We look at almost anything, we could almost be fearful. We could almost be very concerned, and we rightly so. With all these things happening. But Jesus speaks to us today 2,000 years after his death, saying, these are some of the things, the birth pangs, before I come again. You will hear, you will see these things happen. But see that you aren't alarmed or not troubled by them. Then he goes into chapter 25, the two illustrative stories to say, do you guys really get what I've said to you guys? Because there are two illustrative stories that he throws in front of them so they get the point. Chapter 25, verse 1. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 of them were wise. The foolish ones took lamps and did not take any oil with them. The wise, however, took oil jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, here comes the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish one said to the wise, give us some of the oil, your oil, our lamps are going out. No, they replied, there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were still on their way to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived, and the virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet. The door was shut. Later the others came. Sir, sir, they said, open the door for us. And they replied, I tell you the truth, I do not know you. Therefore keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. So Jesus gives us the first parable explaining when he's coming back and what's going to happen. And he couches it in a parable about a wedding. Now, most of us aren't familiar with weddings 2,000 years ago. If we're invited to a wedding, we just think, well, gosh, I'll go to a wedding. It might take an hour, hour and a half for the, you know, service and refreshments afterwards. I'll go home. Jesus' time, far different. The wedding feast was 7 days long. That would sort of stun you if you had to go to a wedding 7 days. I'd say, boy, I'm sort of busy, you know, or whatever. But anyway, 7 days long. And the custom was in that time, engagement was the same thing as marriage. And so they had arranged marriages where parents would actually arrange a marriage for their kids. And when they were engaged, the young men started to build one-room house on the complex of his parents, of his complex of his father. And so his father would have a complex of all his sons, sort of in a circle, and each of them would build a house or build a one-room structure on his father's place when he knew he was going to get married, when he got betrothed. And this was encouragement for the young man. Can't imagine, I'm going to get married. I better start building my house. I better start building my one-room type structure so I can get married. And before, he couldn't get married until he had that done. No doubt people came by and saw how close he was at times. No doubt the bridesmaids came by and saw, gosh, how close is he? Should we go over the bride's house now? Is he close to being done? And if he was close to being done, they would go. The groom, however, would come at a time when the bridesmaids weren't expecting him. It was a game. And he always wanted to catch them unawares. And so the bridesmaids, their custom was to be by the bride's home and have candles or have oil lamps and have enough oil to be there. And when the groom came to get the bride, many times in the middle of the night, then they would have a procession back to the groom's home. And if the custom was, too, when the door was shut to the groom's home, because it was a 7-day feast, the door was shut and no one else would be allowed in. That's the story of the parable. And so Jesus said here, there were 5 wise and 5 foolish virgins. 5 had enough oil, or more than what they needed, and 5 didn't have enough. And when they said the bridegroom is coming, the 5 that were foolish said, please give us some of your oil. We don't have enough for this festival that's walking through the streets in the middle of the night to light the way. And the five that were foolish or wise said, we don't have enough for us and you. You need to go buy some. So they're still going, and on their way, the groom came, and they were left out. So what Jesus is saying here is we need to be ready. We need to be ready. We need to be ready in our spiritual life. We don't know, and you can't borrow spirituality. True story. In 1937, on the Missouri River, there was a man who was in control of a drawbridge named John Griffith. He was controller over a drawbridge, you know, obviously, that went up like this and came back down. And he decided to take his son to work with him one day, 8-year-old son. And they had a great time. It was about noon, and the ships were coming through, so he had the drawbridge up. They were on the observation deck eating their lunch, and most of the ships were through. And he heard something in the distance, and he realized, looking at his watch, that it was the Memphis Express that came through. 1:07 in the afternoon it was. So he had to get the bridge down so that the Memphis Express would come through. 400 people were on the Memphis Express at that time. But as he looked, he was trying to find his son, and his son was caught in the main gears that ran the drawbridge. And he thought, how can I possibly go and rescue my son and let the drawbridge down too? He realized that he didn't have enough time. He realized that he had to make a decision between 400 people and one. But the one was his son, and the 400 he didn't know. But he knew he still had to make a decision. But finally, he pushed the master switch and the drawbridge came down. His son perished. And as the train went over, he took his hand away from his tear-stained face and he looked up at the train and said, do you know what I did for you? As he saw people reading newspapers and children eating ice cream with long spoons, he looked at them, do you know what I've done for you? That's what Jesus did for us. He sent his son. Jesus came into the world, and he died in our place. Just like Mr. Griffith didn't have any time, we need to make sure that we have time to be what God wants us to be in our life. It's a graphic illustration, I know, but it puts it into where we live, doesn't it, of what the Lord has done for us. Because we can't imagine what Jesus did for us, but we can imagine if we have loved ones, especially children, we can imagine. So first of all, he's saying, that's what, first of all, it's going to be like. People aren't going to be expecting my coming, but I will come. People aren't looking. The next parable is a parable of the talents, and that is verse 14. And again, it would be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to the other 2 talents, to the other 1 talent, each one according to his ability, and went on a long journey. The man who had received 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. The man who had received 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 talents bought the other 5. Master, he said, you've entrusted me 5 talents. Seeing, I gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, you good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. The man who had 2 talents came and said, master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. I've gained 2 more. And the master replied, well done, you good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a few things. I've put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. The man who had received 1 talent said, master, he said, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you hadn't sown gathering where you hadn't scattered seed, so I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. The master replied, you wicked and lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I hadn't sown and gathered where I haven't scattered seed. Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with bankers so that when I returned, I would have received back with interest. Take the talent from him, the one who has, and give it to the one with 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. And whoever does not have, even that will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside where into the darkness where there be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Talents. We have no idea of talents either. We think of talent, and you think of America's, you know, funniest video, or you think of America's Got Talent or something like that, don't we? Talent is not that necessarily at all what he's talking about here. Talent was a sum of money. 5 talents was worth 82 and a half years of work. Take your salary if you're still working, multiply it 82 and a half times, and you would have what the man had for 5 talents. Well, depending on your job, that's probably a lot of money. If you're retired like me, maybe not. The man with 2 talents, 33 years of money. The one with 1 talent, 16 and a half years of money. And he went, the master, and it's interesting to say, he gave them as he realized that their ability. He knew their ability that he had, and so no doubt he gave them money as to their ability. He went away for a long time, and then he returned. And the one that had 5 talents said, Master, Master, I've gained 5 more. And his master said, well done. Pat him on the back and said, you good and faithful servant. Share with my master's happiness. The one with 2 said, Master, I've gained 2 more. And he said, well done. Share in your master's happiness. However, the last one said, you know, I knew you're a difficult guy. And I knew that you reaped where you hadn't harvested and or sown and reaped where you hadn't. So I hid it in the ground. And here it is what yours. 16 years of work and a half years of work. And he said, you wicked servant, you lazy, because you should have invested with the bankers. The Lord has given each of us time, talent, and ability to serve and use for him. Someday we will stand before him and give an account. You know, you're probably, compared to the rest of the world, millionaires. You might say, Pastor Dennis, I think you've not looked at my checkbook lately. I'm not a millionaire. But compared to the rest of the world, you are. Many places in the world, their annual income is $100. I know Brother Darrell here would tell us that. He goes all over the world and sees it all the time. We are rich compared to them. Our time, our talent, and abilities. The most valuable thing that you have, guess what it would be? Your time. Your time is the most important thing. I'm going in helping my son. He's restoring a building in Bellingham. And I go up every other Monday. I call it slave labor. And I call him boss. It's really sort of cute. He just had his 38th birthday. You know, if you're getting old when your children get old. And so anyway, we go in this building and tear off the sheetrock and stuff, and we put it in his truck. We go and dump it off. And I'm reaching out to my son who's away from God. I'm reaching out and showing love and mercy and grace. And I'm stripping stuff off the wall and carrying stuff, and I have to wear a mask because it's so the bare air is so bad in there. But I'm reaching out because I'm wanting to touch his life. And then I take him out to lunch, and I'd say, Matt, you know, when you become a millionaire, you take me out to lunch. And that's going to be a while. I'm not expecting that anytime soon. And so he looks at me and it says, yeah, Dad. And Anyway, he's away from God right now, but he won't always be. And that's why I'm reaching him. That's why, and the, his job, what he does, he's running a distillery. Now, whether you like it or not, you know, and I can't put my finger at him and say, but I need to show God's love and mercy and grace to him. And so one thing I have right now is time. And I have more time than money, that's for sure. One person in my life that just has impacted me more than maybe any other is my grandmother, Grace. Her husband died when he was 39 and she had 4 children, 2 boys, 2 girls. My mother was the oldest. She raised those children and worked all through that time. She went to church and taught third grade Sunday school class for 50 years. 50 years. She wasn't Billy Graham. She wasn't a theologian. She didn't know Greek or Hebrew. But yet she was faithful. Maybe she just had one talent. But her one talent she used for Jesus, where she would come up to our house and drive up and say, "You grandkids are going to church." As, "Yes, Grandma Grace, we're going to church." And I got in the car and we'd off to church. But she's one reason I'm in the church today. She's one reason I'm a pastor today, is because my grandmother, she prayed for my mom, who was away from God, for 40 years. 40 years. And I became a senior pastor myself, and I was in their hospital room. And I told my mom, I said, "You know, you need to get right with God." And she said, "You know, I don't go to church much, I know." And I said, "Not about going to church. Now, don't tell Pastor Craig that Pastor Dennis said you don't need to ever come to church, because that's not what I'm saying. But it's not going to get you to heaven." Yeah, thank you, Barry. And so I came to her bedside and said, "You need to just ask the Lord to forgive you what you've done wrong." She did, after 40 years of my grandma's prayers. I went down the hall, said, "Dad, you know what Mom did? He invited Jesus into his life." And my dad was driving a truck to go see her, oftentimes driving to the hospital and driving back and forth. And he had an impression, and like the Lord was saying to him, "She's going to be okay." She was going to be okay. The Lord was going to take her to heaven, where she no longer had to suffer and hurt anymore. She passed away. And my grandmother was one talented person, but she used it for Jesus. I'm asking me, I ask all of us, what are we doing for Jesus? What's our life like? The last thing I'd like to share with you is Holman Hunt. Maybe a lot of us don't know much about him. He was an English painter. He was born 1827. He died 1910. And this picture that you see on the screen is called The Light of the World. It is hung. There's 2 original paintings. You say, "How is that?" One 6 feet tall and one shorter. And one's in St. Paul's Cathedral in London and one is in Oxford University. So there's 2 originals. And he painted it because of the scriptural verses, Jesus saying, "I am the light of the world." And the scripture verse, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me." A couple things about the picture I would like to draw out attention. As I was looking at it, he's at the door and knocking, and his feet are sort of turned away. When you're going inside, you're thinking the person's going to answer the door, you knock, and you're standing in front of the door, right? Probably. Though we had a senior that had dementia, and he was in World War II, and he had a 45 caliber big gun, And so every time I knocked on his door, I stood to the side. I said, because finally his children took his gun away. But thank heavens. But every time I stood at the door, I was saying, oh, I don't think so. But he's standing at the side, and his feet are sideways. He's knocking on the door as if he's saying, oh, just a couple more knocks. He's been knocking a long time, and he's saying, well, I'm about ready to leave. You'll see that there's no doorknob there. This was the original painting, which more modern paintings were painted from, and it's because he won't force his way into your life. He won't make you to be what he wants you to be in your life. That's your decision. You have to open the door. You notice that the door is overgrown. There's been a long time since there's been any communication with Jesus. A lot of weeds, a lot of things have grown up. You can see his face. His face is that he's longing to have a relationship with a person inside that door. And he brings a light, and the light is a light of hope. The light is a light that brings light into the person's life if he would just open the door. A lot of us, no matter where we're at in our spiritual journey, we've had weeds grow over our door. It may be this, it may be that, it may be the other thing, but that relationship with Jesus has been sort of not as much as what we could be. And so there's weeds that have grown over the door, and he still knocks. He still lovingly wants a relationship with us. The Lord is speaking to our hearts today. He loves you so much the way you are, but he loves you too much to allow you to be the way you are. Do you get that? He loves you the way you are, but he wants to draw closer to you. He's knocking at your heart's door saying, please, I want a closer relationship with you. No matter where you're at, the Apostle Paul said that he had needed a closer relationship with God. If you're here, none of us have a perfect relationship. And so, how many weeds have grown up in front of your door? I'm hoping not a lot, but if there is, realize today can be a start of a new day, a new chapter, a new time in your life where you say, yes, I'll open the door up, not only that, but I'll take away those weeds, those things in my life that have been hampering my relationship with you. As I thought about this, I thought, well, what kind of a message is this? And then I just said, well, you only get to preach twice a year, so hey, you might as well just throw everything at him at once. It's like the farmer who went and had a whole truckload of hay, and only one cow came in from the field, and he dumped the whole truckload off. And his fellow farmer said, well, gosh, why did you dump the whole truckload off? And he says, well, I don't care if one person comes or a whole herd. I just dump it all off. And it's sort of like that. But the Lord has touched my heart too. In a world of easy believism and shallowness in the Christian church today, we need to get further down and realizing God loves us so much that he wants a deeper relationship with us. You might call that meddling. I'm calling it, I'd rather know now than know later. You know? And I want someday more than anything else to say, just like Gamma Grace, well done, you good and faithful servant. I would just rejoice at that. No doubt my grandma, many years ago when she went to be with Jesus, the Lord said, well done, Grace. You've been faithful. You've been faithful. Thank you. Thank you. And that's what I want to hear him say to me too. And that's, I'm sure, what you want him to say. So if there's weeds, if there's stuff in your life, he's knocking at your door today. And realize he just wants a relationship with you. He loves you the way you are, but loves you too much to allow you to be the way you are. We're going to take our morning offering and just ponder those words, because God has something wonderful for each of us. He has a much, much, much deeper spiritual walk for us than what we have right now.